use a mic. I'm going to talk really loud, okay? Okay. Good evening. I like him. He's very, he participates. Do what now? Okay. Okay, I have handouts from last week. If you haven't gotten one, we can. They're kind of hanging out on different tables. It's part three, August 11th, and then there are handouts for tonight. And I don't know if I had. We had such a low crowd the last couple of weeks. I don't know if I have enough tonight. So if there are couples, if y'all can share tonight, that would be helpful, and we'll make sure that it gets put up on the DMF link and for you to. You know, download it or look at it again. So last week was probably one of my most favorite things, is for us to understand who we are in terms of covenant. Because it is in covenant that we find our identity in the Lord, and it's also in covenant that we find our identity with Israel. And what our role is, what our status is. And I didn't go into adoption, but anybody that wants to know what it really means to be adopted, you just need to listen to Rico Cortez. Does the greatest teachings on what it means to be adopted into the family of God. And bar none, he does one of the best jobs with adoption. And if you want me to help you find that, I may even have that DVD at my house. But understanding that it is the Abrahamic covenant that we stand in. Without the Abrahamic covenant, there is no renewed covenant. We stand in the Abrahamic covenant. That's one of the reasons there's an identity crisis in the church today, is because they start at the renewed covenant that was not made with the church. It was made with Israel and Judah. Okay? And so starting past the foundation, you can't have a house without foundation. And so understanding how important the Abrahamic covenant is, and how the Mosaic covenant is an executive arm of that, how the renewed covenant is the essential executive arm of that, and as we look at the Davidic covenant, the Davidic covenant and the return of Messiah and him setting up his kingdom, and Israel will be the mediator of that. Israel has to be the mediator of that. That's what the word says. And so Israel has to be in the land for that to happen. And they're the ones who will bring and welcome the king home. And we see that. I hope you got a chance to read, I think it was 2 Samuel chapter 19. What a beautiful depiction of, I just mentioned it at the end last week, what a beautiful depiction of David when he leaves Israel, when he leaves Jerusalem and goes over to the Mount of Olives and is weeping for Jerusalem. Who does that remind us of? And he didn't come back until they came and got him. And they brought the king back. It's a beautiful, beautiful foreshadowing. So you might want to take some time to read that in the scriptures. Tonight, you know, I teach on anti-Semitism, but I have some of the best teachers in the world that I have sat under. And if I could just pick y'all all up and take y'all to Yad Vashem and sit you in a classroom there that I have had the privilege to sit in, you would sit under some of the best, without a doubt, some of the best. And because of, many of you know Dr. Susanna Kokanan, she came and spoke to our congregation here. And we're doing our best to try to figure out how she can get back over here at some point. Anyway, I met her through, she was the director of the Christian Friends of Yad Vashem, a very miraculous department that came into being in 2006, I think. Because in 2016 we celebrated 10 years. At the Christian desk of Yad Vashem. I mean, how important is that we have a Christian desk at Yad Vashem when the Holocaust, when Jews remember the Holocaust and that Christians perpetrated it, okay? So it's a very miraculous thing, and she was one of the first directors and served them for 10 years. And through her, she has a doctorate in Holocaust studies, and she's also, you know, is very passionate about the persecuted believers today, the people who are under persecution, not just the Jews. And so tonight I'm going to be showing part two of a webinar that she did with ICEJ Canada. Why do I say ICEJ Canada? ICEJ stands for International Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. In 1980, when all the embassies left Jerusalem out of boycotting because of the Palestinian issue, some men got together. They got together and established an embassy to represent believers around the world that we weren't leaving Jerusalem. Okay? We weren't leaving Jerusalem, and that we would always call Jerusalem the capital of Israel, no matter what the rest of the world. That's why I think all of you understand that, but what a big, big deal that Trump put our embassy back in Jerusalem. And I've stood there, and what an incredible, incredible, and also stood by the open lot where they're going to build the permanent one. But what a big, big deal. Everybody promises it, but nobody follows through. And it had already been voted on years and years ago. But ICEJ Canada, there are ICEJ offices all over the world. And Donna Holbrook, who will be doing the introduction of Susanna tonight, has been the director in ICEJ Canada for a very, very long time. I can't even tell you how long. As long as I can remember, she's been the director of the Canada office. So Susanna is going to do, and there were two parts. So you can go to their YouTube and watch part one. And I say part one, for anybody who's done any Holocaust study at all, or anti-Semitism study, let me say that, not Holocaust, anti-Semitism study, part one might be elementary for you. It's very well done with slides just like tonight, from medieval times to the coronavirus today, okay? Especially the kids, Hannah, this is great because it talks about how anti-Semitism in the church was launched by the writings of the church fathers, okay? Many of you have studied that, but maybe you haven't, but it's a great place. She doesn't go into depth in that, but you could take some time to look up some of those sayings of the church fathers. We are going to be looking at part two tonight, but part three, she kind of sums it all up. But she talks about how to recognize it, because today we have, is that a hate crime? Or is that just, you know, or is it anti-Semitic? I mean, we're having those debates, and those debates are going on. We're having those debates about a lot of things, and we're going to be seeing that more and more in the days to come. Is that really is that a hate crime, or is it a hate crime involving anti-Semitism? All right? So tonight is so appropriate. She and I were talking, and I was talking about using her slides, and she said, Denise, just, you know, I'd love her to do this live, but she's in bed right now. She lives in Finland. And so I've watched it several times, and what I've put on your handout is the titles of the slides, so that's one less thing for you to write down, okay? So as we move through this, this will help you if you have some little things you want to jot down. You can always go back and watch it again, but this will give you a good foundation and keep you from having to write down every beginning title to the slide. You're going to understand, and we already know, do we not, the power of social media. The power of social media. And for good and for evil. And you're going to really recognize that tonight. I want to mention, and Jose, I'm mentioning this for you because you like audio and video. I'm going to encourage people to read. Let me tell you something. I don't know how long I've been studying the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, but I can tell you that every time I read something, I learn something new. And not historically, I'm talking about today. This book by Barry Weiss, do y'all know who she is? Does that name sound familiar? She just resigned/got fired from the New York Times. One of the best books I've ever written. She is a non-believing liberal Jew. But you talk about having her finger and on the pulse of what is going on as a Jew, it is fabulous. And I read anti-Semitic books nonstop. So I tell you this, and I mean, you can get in line to borrow this, but what's so funny is I picked this up to share tonight. Okay, yeah, I'm looking for my glasses.
Okay.
Yeah, I might need my glasses to find them. Tonight, the name of part two is anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Boy, are we inundated with conspiracy theories right now? Whether true or not, I mean, they're floating everywhere, are they not? And it was so funny, I was going to show this book tonight, and she says this: no longer the exclusive province of the far right, the far left, and assorted religious bigots, anti-Semitism now finds a home in identity politics, as well as the reaction against identity politics in the renewal of America. First isolationism and the rise of one world socialism, and in the spread of Islamist ideas into unlikely places. A hatred that was, until recently, reliably taboo is migrating toward the mainstream, amplified by social media and a culture of conspiracy that threatens all of us. Anyway, I cannot recommend her. It's an easy read. You don't even want to put it down. Very well done. Tonight, Dr. Susana Cojonen, that you'll be listening to, she finally got her book translated into English. It was in several other languages, Finnish, German, Hebrew, several other languages, but it is now in English. What I love about Susana, and those of you who have met her know that she loves the Word of God, and she believes that anything she teaches and anything that we need to know about what's happening today can be found in His Word. She probably does the best job of taking anti-Semitism back to the Bible. You know, a lot of people write about anti-Semitism and we talk about the Bible, but because she loves the Word and depends heavily upon it for her understanding today, she does a great job with that. So I recommend you buy it. It helps her. You can get it on Amazon. Anyway, so she'll be Anti-Semitism, the Bible, and History. So one of the few people that really dives into the Word of God about anti-Semitism. Okay, I want to read this. Genesis 3, verse 14. Adam and Eve have fallen in the garden, and the Lord God said to the serpent, "Because you have done this, cursed are you more than all cattle, and more than every beast of the field, and on your belly shall you go, and the dust shall you eat all the days of your life. And I will put enmity," which means hatred, war, hostility. "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed." Who is the woman in Revelation? Israel. Okay. Eve didn't live forever.
Right.
Right? And her seed, Abraham was promised a land and a seed, but he was also promised seeds. Right? The seed being the Messiah, and the seeds being the offspring and descendants of Abraham, who would end up being the children of Israel through the promise of Isaac and Jacob. So this is an ancient hatred right there, Genesis 3. This is an ancient hatred. It's not going to go away. I have people ask me all the time, why the Jews, you know? Because they are His bride. That's how He planned redemption, as we've talked about in the last few weeks. And it will not end. And I want you to understand that in America, it is coming, coming, coming fast and hard. And you need to know what you'll say, where you'll stand, what you will do for the Jewish community and the believing community. It's not a time, at that time, it's not a time to make a decision. You need to know now. And I think tonight's presentation by Susana will help you in understanding the urgency. Christine Williams is also, you'll
welcome to the second part of ICJ Canada's webinar series, of which we are proud to present to you, particularly in our 40th anniversary year. I'm Donna Holbrook, Executive Director for ICJ Canada. If you are joining us for the first time, please visit our website at icjcanada.org and at Facebook, ICJ Canada, to find out more about our organization following our presentation today.
Susana has an accent.
Last Wednesday, Susanna presented on from medieval anti-Semitism to COVID-19, an ancient hatred in a contemporary context. Today she'll be speaking about anti-Semitic conspiracy theories from the protocols of the elders of Zion to COVID-19. Our moderator is Christine Douglas Williams, our public affairs and media consultant. She is also an award-winning journalist and author. She will now, and also from our dear friend, Dr. Susanna Kokkonen, is joining us from Finland, where she's originally from. She has her doctorate from the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Her expertise is in Holocaust studies. She is a world traveler and has lived and worked in several different countries. She speaks 7 languages and frequently lectures around the world on topics such as the Holocaust, anti-Semitism, and persecution. She was our director of the Christian Friends of Yad Vashem for 10 years. She is a contributor on print and electronic media and often appears as a guest on TV and radio shows. And we welcome you today, everyone, and to Susanna's presentation.
So before, thank you so much, Donna. So before we move on to Susanna's presentation, I just want to say a couple of words before we go there. Before we move on from the medieval era to the Enlightenment and modernity. Now, from the grim days, we have to bear in mind, directly following the Holocaust or the birth of the State of Israel and international Zionism, we hear Israel and Zionism frequently maligned and in very dark ways. So where did these ideas come from, and how are they visible today, even during COVID-19? Finally, how do we react as Christians to these anti-Jewish and anti-Israel views? During our Q&A later on, we ask that you type into the chat. You'll see that little symbol that says chat, and we ask you to wait till the end of it when we get into the Q&A to start typing your questions. So without further ado, we welcome with, and it's our privilege, Susanna Kokkonen. Thank you, Susanna.
Thank you very, very much. I'm very, very pleased to be here and thanking ICEJ Canada for allowing me to be here. Let me just share my screen with you. And today we are going to start from anti-Semitic conspiracy theories by reading from the book of Isaiah. Now I want to say that Isaiah was living in a very troubling time. There were armies that were encircling Jerusalem, and people were getting really worried. And in that situation, when they were worrying so much, instead of just looking at God of Israel and what he would be able to do for them, they were actually looking at the conspiracies, looking at the enemies. And God spoke to Isaiah, and this is what he said: "Do not say the conspiracy concerning all that this people call a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. The Lord of hosts, him you shall follow. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. He will be as a sanctuary." And I'm saying this because the reason that I've been invited to give this particular webinar is that we are actually finding these conspiracy theories not just in the anti-Semitic movements, extreme left or extreme right, but actually being passed around by very regular people and unfortunately even in our community. Now, most of my material today intentionally is taken from the social media. And these pictures, you saw them already last week, because I just want to remind you that Jews have always been depicted as a virus. Virus is invisible, it's insidious, it infiltrates the body, and you don't know how to fight against it. And we can actually see that these conspiracies involve the same ideas. So what we have when we talk about conspiracies is what we call dual accusation. Dual accusation means that there are completely mutually exclusive things, but all of these things are said about the Jews. So, for example, Jews are all very wealthy, but on the other hand, they are all communists, and therefore they have to live in poverty. They are Freemasons and globalists, which is international. But on the other hand, they only have tribal loyalty. They are only loyal to each other. They are all wealthy because they control world banking. But on the other hand, they are not very powerful because they have to infiltrate the society. They control media. Hollywood is very liberal. But on the other hand, it's the Zionist lobby. We have the accusation of Holocaust industry. The Jews perceive themselves as victims. But on the other hand, we have the accusation of Jewish cabal, which means like a secret plot to throw over governments and so on. So you can see here that every possible accusation can be and is being made against the Jews. And today we look at them one by one. And we want to start from this book, The Protocols of the Meetings of the Learned Elders of Zion, from 1902-1903, from Tsarist Russia, where in Russia, anti-Semitism actually was kind of state policy. What happened to the Jews at that time was that there was something called the Pale, the settlement, and there was a certain area, in other words, where Jews were allowed to practice professions, where they were allowed to live. People were suffering terribly. There were frequent pogroms, violent attacks against the Jewish communities. And it's in this situation that Sergei Mills, who was a religious mystic, a religious writer, he fabricated these documents, which he claimed that they were an authentic record of the meeting of the 12 tribes of very powerful Jews who were meeting to discuss how they would control the world. And these, of course, have been shown to be a complete fabrication, but they are the most influential anti-Semitic writings ever. They have been translated into countless languages, are still being sold in many different parts of the world. And you will find that this idea of this Jewish meeting, how to take over the world, that this is somehow behind most, if not all, of these conspiracy theories. So I do want you to bear in mind where this comes from and that it's a fabrication, but you will be seeing it over and over again. So this picture here, this is supposedly a movie poster. And what do you see in this movie poster? You see that there are piles of books. They are actually the Twin Towers, because you can recognize that there are buildings around them from New York. And then you can see the smoke. So this is a movie poster for the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. And why? Why this? Because following the protocols, Jews have been accused of all kinds of conspiracies, of all kinds of wars, terrorist attacks, and so on. So one of the most popular things that you will find is the accusation that relates to 9/11. And the accusation is that actually it was not Arab terrorists, it had nothing to do with them, but it was Israel and the United States that actually committed this act of terror. And there is this frequent accusation that is being repeated that Jews did not go to work that day because they had been warned that that day there would be an attack. Now, I want to bring in the facts, and the fact is that we know that the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, had actually been warning the CIA that there might be an attack coming. What do we know else? We know that there were Jews who died in 9/11. So in order for us to believe that the Americans and Israelis committed this horrible, horrible thing, we would completely have to ignore the facts. But that is how conspiracy theories work. Facts are not so important if you believe something like this. So it's not just 9/11. It's also the murder of JFK. Countless things are being contributed, and somehow the Protocols of the Elders of Zion is behind it. And here you see it in a very visual kind of way. The other accusation, and I'm presenting this here because it relates to Tsar's Russia as well, is the accusation that Jews are communists. And this was one of the main things that Adolf Hitler was arguing before he came to power. It was one of the main things that he was saying so people in Germany would vote for him, because there was a great fear of communism. So now, what we have to bear in mind is that this is not actually a lecture on communism or other things. We are only looking at it from the perspective of understanding what is being said in an anti-Semitic kind of context. So at the background, we have Russia under the Tsars, who have a secret police that is very effective and very cruel. People are still living in slavery. The situation is unbearable to many people. So the revolution of 1917 is very welcome. It's the first time that many people feel that they have a chance to contribute to what is going on in that country. Most people are happy to get rid of the Tsar and all the related people. During World War II, the Soviet Union, that's the name then, is showing great heroism in fighting in Leningrad, in Stalingrad, in liberating Auschwitz, coming all the way to Berlin, and so on and so forth. But then something happens with Stalin. He's very suspicious of people, like most dictators are. And there is like a cleansing campaign, and I'm not talking about ethnic cleansing, because he doesn't discriminate against anyone. Anybody who is the subject of disloyalty would be sent to Siberia or would be just murdered. And there's a complete suppression of national identities. And I know that very well, because there were many Finnish people who were living on that side of the border, and they also suffered terribly or were just simply murdered by Stalin. Now, why is this important? I'm coming to the point. My point is that some Jews supported the communist movement. There were some Jews who were fighting for the revolution. And there were others who were not. And during this campaign to suppress national identities, Jews are in no better position than anybody else. You might know about the refuseniks, Jews who wanted to leave the Soviet Union, who wanted to come to Israel, and there was a great movement. ICEJ was part of it, but it was very, very difficult, if not impossible, to leave. So they suffered from the same things like everybody else did. And then, when the State of Israel was founded, originally the Soviet Union supported the founding of the State of Israel, it's possible that they were thinking that this would be an outpost for them in the Middle East. And that didn't happen. So what did they do? They started actually arming Israel's enemies. So Egypt and Syria, for example, had any number of military advisors from the Soviet Union, and they had a lot of weapons they were receiving from them. So this was the influence in the Middle East. In addition, actually, with the agreement or closing of eyes by the Soviet Union leaders, terrorists were murdered in Eastern Europe. So that's another aspect. And the third aspect is that actually the Soviet Union many times was leading a kind of anti-Israel campaign in the UN. So now this accusation that Jews are being accused of being communists, or the state of Israel even sometimes is being accused of being a communist state. Israel is a very pluralistic society. You have all kinds of opinions. It's a democracy. So I find this accusation very unrealistic. And I think we need to be aware that usually people don't really know what happened in the Soviet Union, and they don't really know what was the influence of the Soviet Union in the Middle East. And I want to come to this next idea. Whenever you see this word Kabbal, even if it doesn't include the word Jewish, just Kabbal, you have to know that it's an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. There are some other explanations about what the word means, but most researchers believe that it came from the word Kabbalah, which everybody knows is a Jewish mystic tradition. It came from the French language into English. And in 1606, that's the first time when it's been used as a political word. In 1642, there was the English Civil War, and that's the first time when it was used in this very specific meaning, plot. A secret plot to overthrow a government, a secret plot against a society, a conspiracy, people meeting in secret. But usually when you see it today, it usually has the association of meaning Jews who are encaged or united in secret designs against the government or against our way of living. And often it goes hand in hand with these expressions, Zionist plot, the Zionist plot to take over the world, world dominion, and things like that. And now I have a picture here, and I intentionally use this picture because I want to make a point. So in this picture, you see that it says Jewish Voice for Peace, and then it has a Palestinian or an Arab person who is running away, and then the Israeli soldier. But the point that I want to make is that Jewish Voice for Peace is a real organization. It exists, and it advocates for far-reaching compromises in terms of the Israeli territory, because it's the Voice for Peace, and they believe that by giving up more land, they'd be able to reach this peace. But the point here is that this is not an organization that anybody would think in those terms, you know, with this soldier who is running after this Palestinian. So my point is that these theories and ideas are mostly very misguided, because this would show a complete lack of understanding of what actually this organization is, yeah, and what is happening and what do they advocate for. The other accusation that is made against Jews very, very often is the accusation that they are Freemasons. And again, this is not a lecture about Freemasonry. So I'm not going to talk about it as a religious or like a kind of club or system. I'm only talking about it in the context of anti-Semitic ideas. So what do we know about Freemasonry? First of all, that it's most common in Britain, in the former Commonwealth countries, which would include Canada, and in general in the English-speaking world. We also know that there have been court cases that have been made against certain lodges of Freemasons because they discriminated against Catholics, against Jews, and non-whites. In other words, their membership was only open to white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. They were persecuted in Nazi Germany, and according to Adolf Hitler, they are a Jewish conspiracy, and therefore they were persecuted. They were banned in much of Europe for centuries. They were completely banned in the Soviet Union and the satellite communist countries, and they are still today banned in most of the Islamic world. Now, is Freemasonry Jewish? Because that's the accusation. So when you look at the symbol that I have here, you see a cross, and you see the Star of David, and you see this kind of like a snake. Usually, the reason why people say that it's Jewish is either because they just want to make an anti-Semitic accusation, or because they have seen the Star of David in some of these pictures and materials. But the Freemasonry actually doesn't prefer one religion over another. The whole thing is that every religion is okay. They believe in a supreme being, but they don't believe in one way of meeting with that supreme being. So what I want to say is that there are Jewish Freemasons and there are non-Jewish Freemasons. And also we know that it is a kind of white Protestant movement. So my argument is that whatever we think about Freemasonry or whatever we know about Freemasonry, but the point is that it's no more Jewish than it's non-Jewish. You know, it's kind of tolerant of any religion, any religious idea, and therefore I don't think that we can really say that it's somehow a Jewish thing specifically. I'm coming now to the heart of the matter, because communism and Freemasonry, these are just like ideas, but now we are actually coming to something that is also practical. We are coming to banking. And this is a frequent accusation against the Jews that they are all bankers, or that Jewish bankers control the whole world. So I want to start from something a little bit different today. And I want to say that the Bible, the Torah, but also the New Testament has a lot to say about this issue. So if you think about the very first stories of the Bible, the beginning of the Torah, you will realize that actually there are several financial transactions that are described in great detail in the Bible. But not only that, there is also a whole code. How do you conduct finances? How are you fair when you are dealing with money? And it's kind of a reflection on what kind of society God wanted to create for his people. But it's also, I think, a reflection on how we as human beings need these rules, because otherwise we might not be as honest as God wants us to be. Some of you might be thinking, well, but what about the New Testament? Well, what about it? Jesus himself didn't hesitate to speak out on financial matters, and he was meticulous in paying taxes, even if he didn't have to, but he did. So I'm saying all of this because I want to say that it's no wonder then that in the Middle Ages, when banking is one of the very few professions that Jews are allowed to practice, that actually we find something very interesting happening, because we find that even the tsars, who are very anti-Semitic, kings, and even popes, they prefer Jewish bankers. Why do they prefer Jewish bankers? Quite possibly because they know that they will be honest and they are going to deal with their money as well as they would with their own. So we find this since the Middle Ages, and it's very fascinating because we have on the other hand these accusations against the Jews, but then we also have this belief that it's better to deal through the Jewish bankers. the accusations that are used to be made against the Jews in this context, they relate to inordinate wealth. And then, of course, if somebody owes money, they don't like to pay extra for that. And then of controlling the nations through banking. So how the banking system work in the Middle Ages? You might have a Jewish family that might be from Spain. So they might have family in Spain. They might have family in Venice. Venice was a very important part of this whole system for economy in that time. And then they might have people under the Sultan in Turkey. So they could give them a note, and the person would take the note to another country, and then they would be able to receive money against that note. So this banking system works so well because there's like an international family connection. But then that also becomes the accusation that is made that the Jewish families are very international, and then they are controlling through banking all these nations. And I want you to look at this picture, the bottom picture. This is very, very common in Arab TV. Sometimes, of course, even in the social media in our countries, where the name Rothschild is very often used as a kind of curse word. It's used to indicate something evil. And you can see that there is like a peak. And then there's ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Israel, UK, the USA, and so on. And they are all kind of getting their nutrition from that peak. So this is how, what kind of accusations are being made. And in this other picture, you see that there are the dollar notes that this man who, he looks like, kind of has the same face like the Jewish virus in the first pictures that I showed you. And he is, of course, a capitalist, but he's Jewish, so he's controlling all these Gentiles who are like totally helpless in his hands. And then below him, you see this man who also is Jewish, and you see this dollar sign and the money. And here it says private, because the frequent accusation is being made that there's some kind of secret meeting of these bankers where they decide on things. So Jews are being perceived as international and as wealthy. And then real money is kind of the practical idea of what they are being accused of. And this capitalism, extreme capitalism, and communism accusation, they coexist and they go together. And related to this, I'm showing you a picture because this picture has been recently circulating in the social media. So I want you to know the whole story of what is the story behind this picture. So this picture is actually a mural, and it was actually painted in the London's East End in 2012. Now, you might be wondering why I'm talking about 2012, but the reason is that this picture has suddenly become very much in vogue in the social media. So I want us to look at the picture first together before I talk more. So in the picture, you have this orange kind of like fiery colors at the background, which usually indicates apocalypse. Something terrible is about to happen, or something terrible is happening in the world. And these colors are an indicator because they refer to fire, perhaps ashes. And then you have these men who are sitting and playing Monopoly game. And if you look at them closely, you have the dollar notes, of course, so there's no hesitation. We recognize what this is. And their table are these hunched bodies. We don't know who they are, but we understand what is happening here. These men are somehow suppressing these people. and they are playing their monopoly game on the backs of these hunched people. Some of the faces of the men who are playing the game are recognizable as Jewish bankers. And behind them, we have this sign with the eye, and this is frequently presented as the sign of the Illuminati, which is a theory of a secret conspiracy. And we, of course, understand that the pyramid with an eyeball on it, that this is also a sign that is connected with the Freemasons and so on and so forth. And then on the left, we have a man, and he's holding a sign with a text. And this man, he's wearing this olive green clothing, and he's also somehow on fire, maybe for his cause. He looks like a revolutionary to me, and there have been different names that have been suggested who he could be. And the text says, the new world order is an enemy of humanity. So this picture is painted in East End. Why in East End? Well, East End, the particular place where this picture was painted on this mural, that used to be a very Jewish area. So there was a great controversy. Councillors from the town council were very upset, and there's a whole discussion that you would be able to find online. This was widely reported in the media. And finally, this mural was removed. So why is this picture making the rounds in the social media now? That is interesting. So let me say something about the artist. The artist calls himself, this is his artist name, Mirwan. He's from the USA. And he defines himself as being anti-establishment. Now, let's think about this for a moment. Most artists, if they are accused of painting something anti-Semitic, most of them would apologize, maybe not for the picture, but for the hurt they have caused. Most of them would try to backtrack, and they would say, no, this was not meant to be like that, but not this one. This man actually said that he is against the ruling class. Bankers are Jewish. So this picture is correctly presented. There are indeed Jewish bankers in this picture. And the problem is that this is a very old accusation. We have to see this picture in light of what we know about anti-Semitism. And now, when this picture is going around in the social media, of course it's an anti-establishment picture. So if you have a problem with the establishment, however you choose to define what that is, then this picture might be one you want to share. I have seen it being passed around in an anti-mask context. But here's the thing, if you are watching this, I think you should go and look at the website of this artist. Because whenever you promote a piece of art, you are not only promoting that picture, you are promoting the worldview the artist has. So this artist has a certain kind of worldview, is engaged in certain kind of things that you can find on his website, and then you can make a decision if this is something you think you should be promoting. I come to our next accusation, and this is about Hollywood. So Hollywood, of course, has Jewish beginnings. There were many Jewish film studio owners. They came to America and they started building Hollywood, they started building the studios. Although Hollywood, and there are some excellent books that have been made about the beginnings of cinema and of Hollywood particularly, of course, has always been mixed. There are all kinds of people, all kinds of studio owners or artists and actors and so on. But yes, it had somewhat Jewish beginnings. Now, some people say that the Jewishness of these people was limited to what they were eating. In other words, we are not talking about people who were maybe very close to their Judaism in terms of religion, but they were Jews. And then in the 1940s, we had the Un-American Activities Committee. And I'm pretty sure that everybody heard about it, and everybody knows that it was an anti-communist committee. But what many people don't know is that it was also very, very anti-Semitic. It was anti-communist and anti-Semitic. And it was very difficult for some of these Jewish studio owners in Hollywood. And that kind of started changing the trend in Hollywood. And nowadays, when we are talking about what is the main accusation, we look at this picture, we see that there is the flag of Israel that is put above Hollywood. But in that flag, we have the swastika intertwined with the Star of David. There's a dual accusation that is very, very strong and very identifiable here, and it is the accusation that Hollywood is too liberal, that we don't like their movies because those movies are shaping our society into very liberal values, into very liberal directions. But on the other hand, Hollywood is controlled by Israel, is controlled by the Zionists. And these two accusations cannot really coexist, because usually Zionism doesn't go so well together with leftist and very liberal ideologies. And I do want to say another thing, just purely focusing on films, that if you think about films and in the maybe past 10 years, maybe two decades, we have seen more films that have actually depicted Jewish life in America. But before that, we might have had a Jewish character, or we might have a film about the Holocaust. But actually, many of these Jewish studio owners, we didn't feel very comfortable in sharing too much of their Jewish experience in the films. So this is just something to think about when you next time hear this accusation. And this is related to it, because we have here the accusation of Shoah business. So we have show business, but now it's called Shoah business. Shoah being the word for Holocaust in Hebrew. So there is an accusation that Jews are using the Holocaust for financial gain and perhaps for political gain. And I do want to mention here that Norman Finkelstein in the year 2000 wrote a book about this. And he actually launched this concept, Holocaust industry. And his point was that Israel was being presented as a victim because of the Holocaust, and so America was supporting Israel politically because of this victim mentality. And he also expanded his accusations a little bit later, and he started saying that, for example, the Swiss banks, that they were paying too much money for the victims of the Holocaust and things like that. And many mainstream historians completely refuted these arguments. Holocaust survivors such as Elie Wiesel actually called him a Holocaust denier. But I do think that it's very important that we are aware about these accusations, and that we are aware that Holocaust survivors actually refer to this as a form of Holocaust denial. And now I'm coming closer to our own time, meaning COVID-19. So Iran, as a nation, has suffered terribly from coronavirus. Many of Iranian leaders have become sick, infected. Some of the satellite photography has shown like open pits for bodies. And there is a suspicion that Iranians do not know and are not sharing with the outside world how many people have died, and the healthcare system has completely collapsed. So it's no wonder then that the Iranians first make the accusation that Israel was spreading coronavirus. They connected it with the United States as well. This accusation spread to Turkey, to Arab media, and then unfortunately also to our social media. So here in this picture, the one above, you can see that Israel is literally showing spreading the virus. And then below it, we see the picture where the lungs are white because of the virus, but they are kind of shaped the same way that the map of Israel is shaped. And then there is white color indicating how Palestinians, how much land they have lost for the virus of Israel. So this is an accusation that I mentioned last time, that Israel is set to spread the virus, but here it's connected with the Palestinian issue. So Jews are spreading the virus, but they can also be infected. The FBI found out that there was a whole campaign, go to a Jewish community if you are sick, and try to transmit the virus to as many people as possible. You can see here that it's drawing on these very ancient accusations. I don't even want to read what is written here, you can see it. And the people who are engaged in this are Holocaust deniers, of course, and then, of course, very extreme right-wing who believe, maybe believe in the accusation, but also want to do this, what they call Holocaust, or the Holocaust. And now, this topic here, anti-lockdown, anti-mask. So again, this is not any kind of lecture on health issues, so I'm only reporting to you in what I have seen about anti-Semitism. So we have had demonstrations against wearing masks and against the lockdown in different countries and so on. And these demonstrations are very unfortunately have also had very anti-Jewish tones. Jewish mayors have, in more than one city in the United States, have been met with the Nazi salute. Holocaust-related symbols, such as the Yellow Star of David, the yellow armband that the Jews had to wear in Nazi Germany and other areas, these have been used in some of these demonstrations. And as you may know, inappropriate use of Holocaust-related symbols is a form of Holocaust denial. Now, COVID-19 is supposedly a lie, and again, this is not a lecture about COVID-19, but if you have seen people who suffered from COVID-19, then you know that actually it's not a lie. Research on vaccine, research on COVID-19 is supposedly Jewish science and is not to be trusted. And I know that this could be quite sensitive to some of us. We might feel this way or that way about the lockdown or the mask, but it's very important for us to see if things are taking an anti-Semitic turn. And here in this picture, you can see the flag of Israel, but where we have the Star of David, we have a rat. And the expression that has been used is that the Jews are our real problem. In other words, the Jews are somehow behind this virus. somehow the Jews are benefiting from the lockdown or from other people having to wear the mask. Completely inappropriate comparisons have been made between mask wearing and what happened in Nazi Germany. And again, I have to remind us that that is considered a form of Holocaust denial. And I want to give you as a resource an article written by Ron Kanter. Many of you know Ron Kanter, who is a major messianic Jewish leader, but also considered a leader in the evangelical community, somebody who knows our community extremely well. So if you go to this website, messiahsmandate.org, you will find his article, Does the Bible Speak to Mask Wearing? And I'm offering it just as a perspective on this situation. And I'm coming to another thing that is also happening right now, and that is, of course, Black Lives Matter. So what we can observe at this time during COVID-19 is that anti-Semitism, I mean, we would like to think that it comes from lunatics, that it comes from the extreme left or extreme right, that it's actually coming from all directions. For me personally, this is the first time that I have been so confused in the social media just watching where these things are actually coming from. So Black Lives Matter is another layer to this whole thing that is happening right now. So the BLM movement has openly supported and supports the DDS movement and the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement against Israel, which seeks to delegitimize the state of Israel, seeks to actually get government sanctions against the state of Israel, and also seeks to spread propaganda against Israel all over the world. So this already means that this movement is not a friend of Israel. But now, during these demonstrations, what we have been able to see is that this idea of intersectionality has become extremely strong. So intersectionality is the belief that all these multiple forms of discrimination have something in common. In other words, women are being discriminated against, gays are being discriminated against, blacks are being discriminated against, and so on and so forth. And whoever is doing the discriminating in each particular situation, somehow these forms of discrimination share some kind of common basis. But for me, this is the first time that I have seen it so openly expressed that Israel is an oppressor of the Palestinians. Jews support Israel. This is the common belief. Jews support Israel. They are also part of what they call the establishment. And therefore, this whole thing of Jews supporting Israel, this is oppression. And this oppression then somehow is also oppression against the blacks in the United States. In order to be able to maintain this idea, you have to do creative thinking. So I'm going to mention one thing. Israel has a very good record worldwide, globally, about gays, about gay rights. So what do? When you say that Israel is an oppressor of the Palestinians, that the gays are a particular group that is discriminated against, and Israel has a good record in that matter, you call it pink washing. Pink washing is actually the term that is being used, and it means that you are using gay rights to hide what you are doing in oppressing another group. So what I'm saying is that right now in the world, we have anti-Semitism coming from all directions, and it's come from the right and from the left. And the situation is extremely confusing. And then this one, well, So when I have been working over this summer and last spring on these presentations, I was very, very shocked when I saw that the picture where I'm actually present in that situation, but I'm outside this picture frame, is being used as evidence of Jewish conspiracy. So in this picture, we have Pope Franciscus, and I was present in the hall of remembrance at Yad Vashem when he made his historic visit in May 2015. So I'm kind of behind the survivors. The survivors are the ones wearing the black kippahs, and Pope Franciscus was so moved by the moment that he actually took their hands and he kissed each survivor's hand. Next to him is standing the chairman of the Yad Vashem, Avner Shalev. Now imagine my shock when I know what this picture is, I know what it presents, I know the context. I was there in that room when it was taken, and I see it, and it's used as evidence of a Jewish conspiracy. This is extremely important for us to realize that pictures are taken out of context. Words, sentences, books, religious texts are taken out of context. Democratic activity, such as lobbying, which is my right and your right when we live in democracy, is shown as something evil and sinister. And finally, it is the Jews that are overwhelmingly targets of hate, and this includes actually the United States and Canada. So this is where we are. So this is my last slide before our Q&A. Who spreads hate? So we need to have the critical skills of separating fact and fiction. We are not to believe anonymous sources. We are not to believe people who copy and paste, who share things they didn't write themselves, who share pictures they didn't write themselves. Because how do you know who put that picture online and what are they wanting to do with it? What is their purpose? What do they want to accomplish? So I'm appealing again to the Bible, because the Bible speaks into everything. 2 Timothy 1:7, Paul says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." So what is the sound mind in this context? So I just wrote myself these three things. One, do you know the source? Do you know who took that picture? Do you know who first posted it? Do you know who wrote that line? Two, did you check the accuracy? Is it a picture that was photoshopped? Did that person really say those words? What was the context? And three, when you post that post, who are you helping? Are you helping a hate group? Are you helping a foreign government? Who are you helping? And my final resource for you, Dr. Michael Brown, whom all of you know, who is very well respected and who knows our community, evangelical community, intimately. He wrote recently an article, "The Rising Tide of Christian Anti-Semitism in America." You can find it in this website, mychristiandaily.com. He's very worried about anti-Semitism rising in our community. So thank you very, very much for having me today, and I'm going to hand it back to ICEJ Canada.
If the Bible is really the...
So those of you who have never heard Susanna, you have now. Incredible, incredible person. When she showed the picture of the Pope, I was happened to be in Israel a month later and was in her office. And she shared a very, it's not for tonight to be shared, but a very powerful experience that she had, not necessarily good, in the presence of the Pope that was there. But that really shocked her when that picture showed up in a conspiracy when she was actually literally standing 3 feet behind those survivors that you see the Pope kissing their hands. At the bottom of your handout tonight, Joanne sent this to me. Joanne Dick sent to me is it called the Elijah Prayer? What's it called, Joanne? Elijah Prayer Army. Elijah Prayer Army. Okay. Anyway, she sent me an email, and in it, you don't necessarily have to go to that, but in it was a link. And if you would go to Israel National News, I think it's .com, you may already get Israel National News. You know, you may get that in a feed in your email or whatever. Israel National News, go to the search engine and look up Jexit, J-E-X-I-T, okay? It is an organization in America by Michelle Terrace, is the one of the leaders of it, and she's a non-believing conservative Jew, and the podcast is less about politics and the fact that the Jews are leaving the Democratic Party and they're trying to encourage more Jews to leave the Democratic Party. They've just carte blanche been part of the Democratic Party. Some of you know the history of that with our civil rights movement and things like that. We don't need to get into that tonight. But I urge you to listen to that particular podcast because Barry Shaw, Tamar Yona is the, it's in Israel. The podcast is in Israel. Tamar Yona is the host of the show. And Barry Shaw from the Israeli Institute of Middle Eastern Studies and Strategy, I've probably said that backwards, is on her show again in this particular podcast with Michelle Terrace. It is very sobering. It's very, very sobering. But you need to listen to it. We know that that November is going to be a month of great unrest in this country, and it probably will be even coming up to that time. Anti-Semitism. George Soros is a Jew, right? Mm-hmm. Do we ever hear that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mark Zuckerberg's a Jew. Do we ever hear that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Norman Finkelstein was a Jew that she talked about. Harvey, what's his name, Weinstein, mm-hmm. from Hollywood? Mm-hmm. No one ever brings up that he's a Jew, right? Oh, it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's coming. Even, and I'm not bringing a conspiracy theory, I just want you to know how it can blindside you, okay? We know they're Jewish, okay? We also know that they don't care anything about Israel. They're not religious at all. There are forces, of course, that we are for, that we would like to see those people turned over, done away with, put in their place. What can I say? You know, have them not be able to undermine the Judeo-Christian foundation of this country with Marxism, socialism, progression. Progressivism is way in the rearview mirror. We ain't even talking progressive anymore. We're talking Marxism and socialism. We're talking Venezuela, okay? So those of us who know what is right and just want these people to be taken out of power. We want them to be taken down. We'd be happy about that. But I want you to know that as that happens, if indeed it does, if it does, that Jewishness is going to come into play. And anti-Semitism is going to come like a bomb among the church. It's already growing. And you're going to have people say, there's our problem. The Jew, George Soros. Right now, it doesn't matter that he's Jewish, does it? You see, the enemy is so shrewd. So understand that what we understand, the average person is going to be blindsided
by anything as anti-Semitism just comes like a raging tsunami across this country. I'm going to close with this. I've been talking to Carolyn Hyde this week. It's just been on my heart. I know she has shared. I don't know if some of you have talked with her or maybe, I'm not sure how much she has posted openly, but she has felt on her trip to the U.S., she leaves for Israel on the 25th. But she's still in America, and it's been on her heart that everywhere she stopped this time, regardless of whether it was a Messianic congregation or not, she has done the clarion call for Jews to come home. At every place she's been, Jewish believers have milled around till everybody was gone to ask her, what do we do now? Okay. I was just talking to her this evening about, we're just messaging back and forth about my heart, about what is happening, and how Ruth Remnant, and we hope the board will meet here soon, and I don't even know what the Lord has. But that's why I'm telling you that as an individual, you need to know what your plans are going to be. Dothan, Alabama, we don't think it'll ever hit here. But we have a Jewish community here that may need us in a way that you've never imagined. What will you do? What are your plans? And so I was just sharing that with Carolyn Hyde, because she and I have been talking. Richard wanted, anyway, we were trying to help him with him finishing up his pilot license, because of Donnie's expertise and all that, so that if he was needed in helping people make Aliyah, that would be something he could possibly do. But we need to really, this was very convicting. I've heard this 3 times now. This was very convicting to me about social media, how quickly we copy and paste. We need to be on social media. We really need to be very, 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 very careful what we're copying and pasting, what we're sharing. Listen, I want to get off of it, but I also know there's a time that it may come in handy for the right reasons. And I'm not here to, believe me, if I had my way, all of these, we could just put all these in the trash and move on. I mean, seriously, but this is the world we're living in. And this can be used for good, and it's being used for good, but it can also be used for great evil. So I leave that with you, and I really don't have another class. I don't really have anything else to say to you, because you can study anti-Semitism. I'll be glad to help you with questions you have, or if there's some things that you want me to share with you. The point is, it is rising. That article by Michael Brown is eye-opening. There are pastors right now in large congregations pointing to the Jews and calling them the synagogue of Satan and saying that they are the plague in our day. It's being said right now in churches. There's nothing new under the sun.
Messianics are being...
Absolutely. 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 Exactly. So I do want you to listen to that Israel National News. Take the time to listen to that podcast. And y'all have heard this before. First the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. It's coming. It's coming. Regardless of the election, folks, we are in a real... we're in a fight for righteousness and justice of the kingdom. Period. We're not talking politics. I'm talking about an unshakable kingdom against the shaking kingdoms of this world. But we better know where we stand. We better know where we stand. And I just encourage you to, if there's something tonight has perked your interest and there's something else you want to learn about, something that you need to know more about, believe me, be careful on the internet what you go look at.
what you go study. Again, make sure you know the source. Make sure you know the accuracy of what you're looking at. And if I can help you in that way, I certainly will. You can watch part one and part three of, and she can clear up part three. She really kind of summarizes and talks about the difference again about hate crimes, hate speech, how that's getting muddied, how that's getting muddied. But from now on, if you do have the news on and you're watching a protest, I want you to count how many times you see something anti-Semitic that has nothing to do with George Floyd. Okay? And Black Lives Matter is a Marxist movement.
Yeah, I wanted to, like, through social media and just different friends, I've kind of been paying attention. And it's interesting that Black Lives Matter, when you read their statement, they're like anti-Zionism, pro-Palestine, and it's like, you think, what does that have to do with,
Black lives.
Justice?
Yeah.
But, and then, so that's the far left. You swing to the far right, and you have, I saw a post the other day that was like, what if, all these bombs throughout history, they were all created by Jews? And on the far right, you'll see factual things being twisted.
Right.
So, like Jeffrey Epstein, the pedophile that was arrested, and his accomplice, Ghislaine, is that how it's hearing? Both Jewish. Her father, actually was in Israeli, like the equivalent of maybe the CIA or something. So there's this whole thing, and it can't just be, oh, they happen to be Jewish and they happen to be evil. It's they're evil
because they're Jewish.
Jewish.
Right.
So,
and that's coming.
I see, like, what you're saying tonight and what she was saying, it was like boom, boom. I mean, it's scary because it's on both sides, and it's
coming.
Depending on
right,
the middle.
Right.
Where if you are a good person who cares about, with Epstein, it's you care about justice for these children who were taken advantage of, or if you care about social justice, at the end of the day, like you said, overnight, it's going to switch.
Yes.
It's going to say, these are the people.
Yes.
And, we look back at Germany and we say, well, how did all the German people, how were they okay with what was done to the Jewish people? But I'll tell you what, the enemy is going to give you a reason.
Exactly.
He's going to give you a reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, they really are evil. That really is evil. Because there are evil people. It's a human problem. It's
right.
A Jewish problem.
Right. Right.
But they're going to pull up these examples of all these evil Jews.
But since the Bible, they've always been the scapegoat. So it will be nothing new. People will have no problem, and the church will have no problem being a part of that. And I mentioned this to you a few weeks ago. Not only do you need to understand God's redemptive plan, and it's going to work out regardless of what happens in our election. Hallelujah, we serve a king that's got this all under control, okay? But that you need to know this because we need to be having these discussions with family and friends. We need to be having these discussions with family and friends so they don't get blindsided and you find yourself with a raging anti-Semitic in your family because they weren't prepared.
I thought to myself, with different friends, I thought, when things get really bad, I wonder if they're going to write my name down as, well, you better check on this person. But speaking of social media, if you are on social media and you are active, you should consider praying about posting a link to what we just watched.
Right. Absolutely.
As awareness of
right.
Getting out ahead of, it's already in the works. But
yeah, but to educate people.
That's her
desire is to educate. And my desire as well, but she doesn't.
If I could add too, I think people in our movement, the Messianic Walk, we love a good conspiracy. And
yes.
One of the biggest conspiracies that we bite hook, line, and sinker, and I've had to confront people over, is that the Jews, Ashkenazi Jews, are not real Jews, they're Khazars. And that, fill-in-the-blank race are the real Jews.
Right.
You can find that in Black Hebrew Israelism.
Right.
You can find it in Armstrongism. You can find it in all kinds of different things, that they are fake Jews, we're the real Jews. So it's almost like this, it's an odd, subversive form of anti-Semitism.
Very insidious.
Yeah, it says we're the real Jews, they're actually not even real Jews, and that's why they're evil.
So they won't have we won't have a problem with that. I mean, if that's where you
right.
stand, then you're not going to have a problem.
It's like the next level up, and yeah, it has no place in the body of Messiah.
Right.
That's awful.
Right. But when we allow conspiracy theories, and what did she read the very first thing? Isaiah says, don't allow the conspiracies of the world to be your conspiracies.
Yeah.
Don't fear what the world fears. Man, that is a word for us. Don't fear what the world fears. We serve the Creator, the Great King, and an unshakable kingdom. An unshakable kingdom. And we're living for such a time as this, folks. For such a time as this. And so, encourage one another. What did Paul say? And encourage one another all the more as you see the day coming, right? Let's not shrink in fear. We weren't given a spirit of fear. Let's be of sound mind and of total confidence in the Lord who created all this, started all this, and is going to take care of all the end loops that must be put in place. So, I appreciate your being here these last 4 weeks. Maybe we can meet again under another subject. And I appreciate your time. And if there's anything that I can do for you, please let me know.
You left one off the list, Chuck Schumer.
Oh, I got. He's not. I can keep listing them. I can keep on.
And Bernie Sanders.
Hi, there you go. I can just keep on. I mean, the list is endless, right? But again, you notice that their Jewishness is not a big deal right now. Okay.
Pelosi was a Catholic. I think she was excommunicated for her.
I was going to say, like, we can list, you know, the Clinton, Pelosi, you know, the non-Jews.